Everybody, welcome back to Gossip Without Prejudice. I don't know which camera to look at. My name is John. Lindsay's name is Lindsay.
Hello.
We are doing another attorney profile today. We're taking a break from all the goddamn Trump coverage that I'm sure many of you are getting sick of. I know I am. I think, where should I start us off? I should probably start us off with our sponsors. Thank you so much. Support for the show comes from Hemet Law. Whether you need fantastic attorneys or want to join a fantastic legal team, go to hemetlaw.com/GWP. Further, thank you to our other sponsors, NordVPN and Quimby Bar Prep, amazingly. I don't know why, how we got sponsors, but they really just letting anyone into the building these days. We're coming at you from our new studio. New backgrounds. You notice the fantastic curtains instead of a blank office wall. We are working on improving the space a little bit more. Let us know what decorations you want.
Yeah.
We have this fantastic duck in our wide shot.
Shout out to the duck. If you're not watching on video, please go switch to YouTube for just a moment just to see videos. You can see our set and the duck.
Or on Spotify. I'm actually a huge Spotify stan myself. I watch Spotify for all my podcasts, video or not. I know we have some viewers on YouTube. We use the video setup here for clips and the like. Anyways, with all that out of the way,
yes,
let's jump right into it. Lindsay, who are we covering today?
We have a crazy story today, folks. We're talking about the lawyer couple Mark and Patricia McCloskey.
That's the Black Lives Matter panic attorneys,
yes,
right?
Yes. I have been on this story for months and months and months. Because what I find, personally, their actions to me are mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited to review this with you folks and John and see what y'all think. First, should we get into a little bit of a background on the McCloskeys?
Sure.
Who they are. Mark McCloskey was born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri. He got his bachelor's in 1982 and his juris doctor in 1985, both from Southern Methodist University. In the span of 2 years, what you like I said?
Goddamn Southern government.
Southern Methodist exactly. University.
Yep. Yeah.
So all in the span of 2 years, Mark McCloskey was barred in Texas, Missouri, Nebraska, Illinois, U.S. Court of Appeals, and the 7th and 8th Circuits. Which I was somewhat impressed by. In his career, he's established mostly on personal injury, spine and brain injuries from car wrecks.
Hell yeah.
Okay. He and his wife have worked together since 1994. They founded their own office.
Got it.
So they live in St. Louis. There's much less out there about Patricia McCloskey. She seems to be less vocal than her husband. She also got her Juris Doctor from Southern Methodist. I thought this was interesting. Over the years, she's been on the board of an organization for horse therapy.
Horse therapy?
Are we
therapizing the horses? Or
We're using the horse to therapize people.
So it's like equine?
Yes.
All that bullshit where they like put people in a pen with horses and it's supposed to be soothing?
Something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. She was a law student mentor and she's a member of the Missouri Bar Association Ethical Review Panel.
She currently is?
No. I believe she was.
No. Okay, no. Spoilers. All right.
So the McCloskeys have a very long, litigious history of their own endeavors, entirely separate from their law careers.
Okay. All right.
So I'm going to go through here real quick a list of many of their personal legal battles.
Okay.
I don't think this is extensive, but they once sued a neighbor for making changes to a gravel road.
Okay.
Twice in 2 years, they evicted tenants from a rental on their property.
Okay.
Mike once sued an employer for wrongful termination.
Fine. Okay.
Mike sued his sister, father, and father's caretaker for defamation. Mark.
His sister?
Mark sued his sister, father, and father's caretaker for defamation.
Simultaneously or independently over time?
Great question. I don't have the details on these cases, but I believe it was simultaneously.
Yeah, okay, simultaneously.
He sued his family for defamation. At least twice, they've filed squatter's rights suits on a small piece of land in their subdivision. They sued their subdivision trustees over a section of lawn in the front of their property that is common ground.
Nice lawn lawsuits. That's sick.
Folks, we're like halfway through this. Once they bought a Maserati, and then they sued the seller because they didn't receive the box of, quote, hard-to-find parts that was supposed to come with the car.
What?
Why didn't they just not buy it?
Nice. Okay.
In one courthouse trip, Mark filed one lawsuit against a neighborhood association for using a photo of their house, despite instructions not to. And on the same court visit, he also filed a lawsuit against a dog breeder who sold them a German Shepherd without the proper documentation.
Is that everything? Well, that's it.
There's a couple more. Okay. They tried to sue their neighborhood trustees more than once for not properly enforcing the rules. The most important one here, a stipulation that unmarried couples cannot live together. Oh. Supposedly, they were targeting a gay couple.
Supposedly.
No, there's no evidence, nothing confirmed, but that's real shitty. The very final one here, and this is what I think to be the most egregious, and again, this is alleged.
Okay.
There were a few beehives that belonged to the neighboring synagogue that were just outside their home's wall. But uh-oh. Unfortunately, the beehives were technically on the McCloskey's property.
And they tore down the beehives.
Exactly. This asshole comes over and tears them down. And then he left a note saying that he did it and threatening a restraining order if the mess wasn't cleaned up by the synagogue. These hives were for honey for Rosh Hashanah and curriculum for children.
Nice.
So this is the kind of flavor of lawyer that we've gotten Mark McCloskey here.
Unk is straight up the worst attorney you've ever met.
Fighting for elves.
And what's worse is I don't even mean he's unskilled. He's just he's like the worst guy you could imagine at any given point in time. I was with you right up until we got to like the defamation suit against his own family. I was like, oh, okay, you know, like subdivision stuff and gravel, like tenants. maybe like stuff, like I've been involved in a tenant's rights suit before. I won.
Hey,
by the way, story on that later. Mm. So like stuff happens in the long arc of history, and there's nothing wrong with going to court if you've been aggrieved. That's however, for sure. I completely lost that perspective when he sued his own family for defamation. Yeah. That's kind of a tough one.
Yeah.
I think the bangers of the highlight reel was like that enforcement of like marital restrictions on marital
unmarried couples cannot live in this subdivision together.
Yeah. Well, at least hey, St. Louis. If it was a gay couple, that means they were acknowledging that they were dating. So that's very progressive.
Acknowledging
of them.
The existence of their relationship.
They acknowledge the existence of their relationship. Gang.
Ooh. So now, are we ready to transition into the big story that the McCloskeys got famous for?
Yes.
Okay.
Go for it.
I hate this so much. So it's June 2020. We are 3 months into the pandemic.
Okay.
A month previously in May, George Floyd was murdered by a police officer just a couple of states over. Mm-hmm. So St. Louis was in all of this. Mm-hmm. This was very heated at the time. St. Louis Mayor Lyda Crewson had literally publicly read the names and addresses of some locals who had written letters supporting defunding the police. So people were like, we should have less police presence. And she doxed them for that.
Nice.
Right? And so because of this, on June 28th, Black Lives Matter protesters marched into the mayor's gated neighborhood calling for her resignation. But it just so happens that was also Mark and Patricia McCloskey's neighborhood.
Yeah.
So these names are rough for me.
So for context, I believe they had like a very successful civil practice. Like they had employees. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
So basically they were in a gated, they were wealthy enough to be in a gated community with the mayor. Okay. Because I see no more evidence of their practice anymore, which tells me all about what happened to their practice and their reputation after this practice sort of collapsed under the weight of their fantastic PR campaign we're about to hear about.
Oh yes.
I remember at the time looking at their website and it sucked. And unfortunately, their website is now gone.
His Senate campaign website is gone, but his practice website for his law firm is still up.
Is that up still?
Yep.
Oh, fantastic.
I got it. I'll send it to you.
Oh,
right
fantastic.
Now.
Put it up on screen. We'll put a screenshot of this up. I'm looking at the McCloskey Law's website here. So first off, nice fucking spreadsheet. Oh my God. Yeah. He has his own picture of
right front and center. A screenshot from the Washington Examiner, the most honorable people of 2020, the McCloskeys.
Yep. So for a bit of context, everybody, you should know that like personal injury is incredibly lucrative. The attorneys who make the most money are always personal injury attorneys. However, you should know that it is an incredibly feast or famine business. Like you'll never usually find a personal injury attorney who's like doing kind of okay. They'll either be going absolutely gangbusters and they'll be the wealthiest fucks you've ever met, or they'll kind of just be like
a regular old
they'll just be like a guy that's just in the neighborhood usually. I mean, there's a little bit more wiggle room than that, but like you don't see stuff in the middle. I like to be in family law because though family lawyers don't get absolutely, the curve is not as high, like the ceiling is much lower on average, you also have a really hard time finding family law attorneys that are failing, right? Because like the band of risk is much lower. Personal injury for whether you love it or hate it, you can you know, fly to space, but you can also fall to the depths of hell. And like family law is really hard to like fuck up because when the recession, when it's a recession, people fight. And when times are good, people fight harder.
That's for sure.
So like there's no, it's like we're separated from the macroeconomic environment around us. Anyways, the reason I'm talking about this is McCloskey Law, a big tactic of personal injury attorneys is they'll have like these stupendously huge like judgments on their website. Yes. It'll be like $10 million, $500,000,
guy $2.5 million for his car injury.
Yeah, negligence, whatever. Yeah. They'll put these giant numbers on their website and on their billboards. A very few, they don't advertise that that's not actually what the client got because the McCloskeys took, on average, depending on where it settled, somewhere between 20 and 50% of that.
That's a huge percentage.
Well, because like that's on average, it's like 30%.
Okay.
But if you go to trial, it's like 50 to 55%. It depends where in the case you settle.
Sure, sure.
But it's never almost, I've never heard of less than 20%. So there's only a handful of states in the country that say when you tell people about settlements, you have to tell them what they actually received. Most states don't require that. So they put the total settlement up, and which is kind of, in my opinion, it's not legally, technically it's ethical, but like in my opinion, it's highly misleading because they'll be like, oh my God, $10 million. When you realize you only get like $5 million of that.
Maybe four.
Your attorney keeps the rest. Wow. Yeah, exactly. But the rest plus expenses.
Yeah, court fees too. So,
yeah, court fees and expert testimony come out of your share, not the attorney's.
Really?
Yes.
That doesn't seem right.
Well, because like the idea is that the attorney's time is free, but in just the attorney's time. So if you need a doctor to testify about your neck injury to win the trial, then that's coming out of your share because the experts aren't free. Someone's got to pay for that. The lawyer will advance those costs to win, but then their share is preserved, generally speaking. Huh. So then that comes out of your share. So you might get even less than that, plus medical expenses come out of your share.
Which means I'm down to $1 million.
Yeah, which means you're somewhere between one
and I can't even afford to buy a house.
Yes, not in Seattle.
That's for sure.
And the McCloskeys do that. Like on their homepage, they have like our record of success, and that's fantastic to talk about your victories, but there's no caveat, probably because if I recall St. Louis or wherever they are, there we go. St. Louis, Missouri. Missouri does not require that in their ethical practices. So keep that in mind when you're looking at attorneys.
Yeah, that's great to know, especially
also,
personal injury.
I don't like them, so.
Take that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know who I don't like? Mark and Patricia McCloskey.
Yes, exactly.
So, the story that they got famous for, back into it here. So I told you about how June 28th, Black Lives Matter protesters are marching into the neighborhood. So according to Mark McCloskey, he did an interview with St. Louis's KMOV News 4 very shortly after the incident. He described it as, they smashed through the historic wrought iron gates of Portland Place, destroying them, and rushed towards my home, put us in fear for our lives. The gate came down and a large crowd of angry, aggressive people poured through. I was terrified that we'd be murdered within seconds.
So just a reminder to the audience, this is a group of protesters who entered a private cul-de-sac on the way to the neighbors, the mayor's house.
So the gate that they entered through was right next to the McCloskey's home, but they still had a few blocks to walk down the street to get to the mayor's. So if you watch this video, you will not see a single person rushing towards their home and putting them in fear for their lives.
They're all headed off screen.
They're all headed directly past the McCloskey's house from what we can see in this video.
And this, of course, this didn't stop the McCloskey's from
coming out of their home. All of these protesters are filing down the street, and it is not a large crowd of angry, aggressive people. It was a gentle stream of impassioned protesters that you can see in this video.
And they were all like, general shades of brown that like terrified that
all sorts of skin colors but general shades of brown.
I love it when the story is just racism.
Yeah, right. So these protesters are walking down the street towards the mayor's house, and Mark and Patricia McCloskey come out of their home. He has like an AR-15 and she's got a handgun, and they start waving these guns around at the protesters, saying things like, quote, "Get the hell out of my neighborhood."
Nice. What I particularly love about this famous image that we're going to put up on screen right now of them standing in front of their...
It's such a good picture.
Yeah, standing in front of their home, which is like, for some reason, their home is like one of those, like the fucking Capitol in the Hunger Games, where they've got like this gaudy, like Art Deco Roman, like it looks like you live in like a fucking... Like, you're trying to pretend you live in a palace.
Yeah, and it's so ostentatious.
Yeah, it's extremely ostentatious tacky. In an out-of-touch way.
Uh-huh. And like fake Roman columns.
Yes, Roman columns. And what's so interesting here is that they come out of there, first off, they both look like hags.
Yes.
Second off, Patricia in particular comes out with, I don't know specifically what type of handgun that is. I didn't know either. At one point. But she came out and she's like holding like a limp wrist.
Uh-huh. And pointing it around.
Yes, and pointing and just randomly pointing it at people.
Yeah.
And I believe they got charged with like a classy felony in St. Louis for this.
Oh,
like just like randomly brandishing weapons at people.
So let's see here. Coming back into my notes, Mark and Patricia were charged with felony unlawful use of a weapon.
Ah, okay, perfect. Mm-hmm. Because like we've talked about the standards of general standards of self-defense. Now, it matters in jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but in general, your response of violence must be in response, so you cannot be the aggressor. Some states impose a duty to retreat, which is to say you must retreat before applying lethal force or significant force, and the force you apply must be proportional and genuine, which is to say you can't like attack someone on the street and say that because they were on the street you feared for your life. They have to be doing something to you. In general here, a bunch of people were there, but they weren't like coming at them, and by waving these weapons all over the place, the state basically stepped in and said, we have a monopoly on violence, and while self-defense is warranted in certain circumstances, you can't like just threaten a crowd of people that because you don't like. But it's pretty clear they just didn't like them because like they were scary and unknown.
Yes. Yeah. It is specifically fear response. If you're curious, I highly recommend go watch that YouTube video. It's not perfect, but it is taken by one of the protesters. And so we get to see how they are or not approaching the McCloskey home. In this little video.
Like in their weird Renaissance style palazzo.
Yeah.
I think
it's so ugly.
I think basically they basically like thought that the state would protect them, and eventually it did. Tell us what happened.
Mark and Patricia were charged with felony unlawful use of a weapon. This could carry a sentence of up to 4 years in prison and $10,000 fine. Mm. Their rifle and handgun were seized by the police. According to an article from Fox 2 Now News, Mark told the news that he wanted his rifle to be disabled and donated to charity.
Mm.
Have you ever heard of a gun charity?
Well, I don't know.
I think I sure haven't.
You can donate all sorts of stuff to Goodwill.
I suppose, who knows what Goodwill is taking these days. So very shortly after the event, we're going to go through a series of events here immediately after this protest.
Okay,
this gun waving, and we'll get to their legal consequences.
Okay.
So very shortly after this, Mark and his attorney went on Tucker Carlson Tonight. Classic. Surprise, surprise.
Tucker Swanson McNear Carlson. Enemy of Gossip Without Prejudice, yes. TV dinner heiress, fun fact.
Really?
Yeah, well, he's not actually an heiress, he's a guy, but I'm going to call him an heiress because he wears stupid bow ties. No, seriously, his full name is Tucker Swanson McNear Carlson.
The reason
he is so, he's independently wealthy because his family owns like an empire of TV dinner, TV dinner and retail distributing for like frozen foods.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I forget which specific company, but like there's a reason he goes by Tucker Carlson and not his full name. Because he is as blue-blooded as they come.
Yeah.
For those of you that do not know.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I despise people who cosplay as people who worked really hard.
Yeah.
When, like, their parents... and I think their parents also had connections in media before he got into media. And purportedly, according to John Oliver, he first got an anchor rotation because like someone was out and then they were like, hey, you, do you just want to try it? And then that started a 30-year media career.
Wow, that's really lucky.
Yeah, I know.
It got discovered in the least interesting way possible.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is there's a reason he and then what was interesting, he was eventually eaten by the very media ecosystem that he created because he got fired from Fox News. Story for another time, but it was not surprising that the Murkowskis went on Tucker Carlson's
right?
segment.
Exactly the same type of messaging.
Oh yeah.
So that was very shortly after. That was in July 2020. And then later that winter, December 2020, the prosecuting attorney was disqualified because she referenced criminal charges in political fundraising emails before formal charges were made.
Yeah.
That's kind of sad. In October 2020, a couple months before that.
But I should say, that's very valid. This was, for better or worse, this was a politically charged prosecution. That doesn't necessarily mean it was invalid. Like, you can have political prosecutions that are very much warranted and supported by the evidence. Mm-hmm. But when we see prosecutors like misbehaving and like playing loosey-goosey with the rules just because they want to get someone, I find them distasteful, but I support their constitutional rights in a government that is constrained by the laws and not by politics. So I want to, I really want to make a full-throated support of like the withdrawal of those charges.
Yeah. So finally, a year after the incident in June 2021, their sentences were brought down a little bit. Mark pleaded guilty to misdemeanor fourth-degree assault, and Patricia pleaded guilty to second-degree harassment.
When you say their sentences were brought down, or do you mean their charges were brought down?
Sorry, their charges.
Their charges were brought down. Okay, perfect. I just wanted to make sure, because it's possible to get a reduction in sentence, but it didn't sound like they had been convicted yet.
And they were convicted, I am happy to say, but they didn't even get any sentences. They just got fines.
Okay.
So together they paid a combined $2,750 in fines and served zero time in jail.
Wow.
No other consequences.
Yep.
So on June 2021, they were found guilty of these misdemeanors. Just a month and a half later, in August 2021, the governor of Missouri pardoned the McCloskeys.
Okay, nice.
So it only took a couple of months. Well,
at the time, I think it was incredibly politicized.
Yes, and incredibly politicized.
So even though they were already facing almost no consequences, I think the government just wanted to make, like, the executive branch wanted to make...
We side on these guys.
Yeah, exactly. Because this is right before... When was this?
This was August 2021 that they were pardoned, which was like 2 months after they were found guilty, which was 1 year after the incident.
Is that leading into election season?
No.
I have to do the sit down and do the math on that.
Yeah.
But it may. Yeah, you're right. I don't think that's heading into final election season. Mm-mm. But I think that would absolutely weigh on everyone's mind. And actually, speaking of which, he had a Senate run, didn't he?
Yes. So he ran for Missouri's senator in the 2022 election.
And fucking lost.
Fucking lost. He ran Republican. He ended up receiving 3% of the Republican primary vote for this Senate run.
Who beat him?
I don't know off the top of my head.
I simply must know.
We must know. I wanted to mention, I found his Senate campaign site in the Wayback Machine.
Oh, okay.
And his Senate campaign site, number one, endorses Trump. Number two, attacks critical race theory and the education system's ideology.
Perfect.
Number three, China as the greatest threat to America and the whole, and the world as a whole. And four, cutting government spending.
So culture war first.
Yeah, culture war first, and then...
Okay, this just in, ladies and gentlemen. Horrific political monster, Mark Murkowski, defeated by Eric Stephen Schmidt.
Whoa.
Born June 20th, 1975, an American politician and attorney serving as the junior state senator from Missouri.
Okay.
And actually, he's still serving, but he does look like a dude who'd be super into collecting, stamps. But in a not endearing way. Hold on.
In an annoying way?
Yeah, just in a kind of a weird... I bet he smells like soup, honestly. Dude definitely smells like soup. But that's who defeated... Okay. That's who slayed the dragon,
like
I think.
Like a butternut squash.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, he was pardoned, faced no consequences. Fantastic. You love to see it.
Ran for Senate, failed.
Did he immediately then fall down the right-wing grift?
Yes. And he's still deep in it, folks. They were pardoned that summer in 2021. In January 2024, Mark and Patricia requested that their records be expunged.
Was it granted?
Yup. Which to me is just absolute bullshit. The judge, Joseph P. White, stated, "The purpose of an expungement is to give people who have rehabilitated themselves a second chance." In 2024, that's what the judge says. We pardoned them because they rehabilitated themselves or whatever. But way back in 2021, 3 years ago, Mark had tweeted, "They dropped all charges except for a claim that I instilled imminent fear in the mob and I'd do it again." Which is exactly the opposite of rehabilitation.
Well, I mean, he was pardoned, so he actually was rehabilitated.
Technically.
He was actually not even, well, it was actually an interesting technical question to see whether or not, I think there was this question with Trump, it's like, is a pardon, this was in Mike Flynn's case where he pled guilty and then was pardoned. The question was whether or not accepting a pardon is an admission of guilt. For constitutional reasons that can sometimes, like, you can't, if you're a felon, you can't run for office, etc. So there's like technical questions about that. I'm not sure how that falls. I will have to look into that, particularly at the state level.
Yeah.
I don't even remember at the federal level. But so do we have any like clips of his radio show?
Yes. And I was just about to get to that.
Okay.
So until March 23rd, 2025, which is just 3 weeks ago at time of recording, he had a radio show on News Talk St. Louis. Unfortunately, we're going to play some of it for you folks here. So you have to listen to it too.
And for our listeners, I haven't heard any of this either.
Yeah.
So we'll be suffering together. Lindsay, let's put up the audio.
All right. I'm sorry, folks. Here it is.
Fans out there will hate me for saying this, but they've been trying to impose soccer on our youth since I was in grade school because it is, let's face it, a universal sport. It's not an American sport. It's not like football, although they call it football in the rest of the world. It's not like baseball. It's not like basketball. It's not a sport which was developed by and became emblematic of the United States. It's a sport which is universal, where they can diffuse the Americanism of even your recreational or your sporting activity.
There was
Mark McCloskey himself
defending the American people from the specter of children's youth soccer.
I didn't want to play too much of it on air, but I wanted to read the precursor to that story because you'll never guess where this starts, folks.
Sure.
He went from, so he ended up on soccer. He started on Sesame Street.
Yeah, and did the gay agenda land somewhere in there or adjacent?
The gay agenda landed about 5 minutes previously in an earlier part of the episode where he was being full on transphobic.
I mean, a second bigot has hit the towers.
Oh, Lord Almighty!
When I hear about this stuff, because the culture war is basically just a large distraction.
Yes, so, and he is head over heels into this.
Yeah, the culture wars is basically just a dog bone. Mm. Like, for example, there are more children with measles right now in the United States under RFK Jr.'s Department of Health.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are like transgender people in all of the West Coast, like at least known, and like in all of Missouri, like in all of these places that care deeply about transgender, like niche issues. Like, wasn't it like in a while ago, it was like in the Dakotas and there was like a ban on transgender individuals in youth soccer. And then they actually looked into the matter and there was literally only like 8 people the law applied to.
Yeah. And they're kids.
And the Republican governor, like, I think he ended up, I'm going from memory here with no notes. I think he ended up actually vetoing it because he was like, I'm not signing a law that's applicable to like imagine being 15 and having the legislature pass a law that's like applicable to you and 5 other people in your district, like, and no one else, you know, like it would be so exclusionary. Mm-hmm. It would be just devastating to the youth experience, but it's so compelling because the raw emotional appeal of it is, I think, and we should do a whole episode on the fight for gay marriage equality, but marriage equality is a very sympathetic understandable parallel.
Yeah.
That over the last 20 years has shifted hugely in, you know, the LGBTQ community's favor, for better or for worse. I think for much better.
Much
better. And, but a transgender individual has like this, I don't want to say this weird factor. It's much less approachable for like the people in the South who, you know, have never lived in a city or experienced true multiculturalism to grasp in the same intuitive way. Because everyone knows what marriage is.
Yes.
No one knows what it's like to experience gender or body dysmorphia.
That's a great point.
And I'm not saying that, like, I'm not making excuses for them, or I'm saying I'm happy about that. I just think that it's going to be a much more enduring punching bag. Because the gay agenda even sounded ridiculous.
Yes.
But the phantom, the quasi misunderstood amorphous specter of transgenderism, whatever they want to call it, is a punching bag that's going to be really hard to defuse, I think.
True.
And people like this live to like
punch.
To punch. Yeah, exactly. That's a great way to put it. And, you know, and it would be so fucking, I want everyone to know right now, it would be so fucking easy to go for the right wing grift and be millionaires right here on this show. If ever you see me hawking like boner pills and like alpha brain supplements like Joe Rogan does, just know I'm sorry, but yeah. I'm driving home in my Lamborghini. If you ever see opinions like that, know that like some crazy numbers are going on. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
The right wing manosphere. Like if you mention one thing about like how maybe, you know, who should use what bathroom, Peter Thiel personally breaks down your door and hands you $50,000, which is kind of the media ecosystem we live in right now. And, you know, in this year of our Lord, 2025. And I don't know about you, Lindsay, but I'm not super thrilled to be known as a left-wing podcast. Because
I don't want to wing to it.
Yeah, I don't want to wing to it.
I want to be about truth and justice.
We're just asking questions. You do the Joe Rogan thing where we're like, we're just asking questions, guys.
We're not here to say what's right and wrong and tell you what to do.
Anyways, we're talking to Trump and no one else.
and Musk.
Yeah, well, it's actually funny because I used to listen to Joe Rogan a lot before the
manosphere.
Well, not before,
evolution.
Actually, yes, before the manosphere, before the pandemic. Back in like 2018, 2019, I actually used to be a huge Joe Rogan fan. I wasn't like number one meat writer or anything. Let's be absolutely clear. I was not like that fucking guy. But I listened to it because he had interesting stuff to say, and he was credulous, like as in curious.
Suspicious.
No, credulous is incredulous.
Incredulous.
Credulous means accepting.
The opposite
Fun fact.
Of suspicious.
Yeah, that gets a lot of people. Yeah, but he has this credulousness where he's like, I don't want to say childlike, but he'll approach anyone with something interesting to say and at least hear them out.
Yeah.
And I used to really appreciate that because his guests were on a spectrum and sometimes he disagreed with them and sometimes he held them accountable as an audience member. That was very entertaining and interesting.
That sounds good.
But Joe Rogan, at least, has greatly narrowed the type of people he brings on and only brings on people he is primed to agree with. It's rather obvious. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because he's now such a huge media personality. He no longer has to work hard to cast, right?
Yes.
He can pick anyone. And so now that he's got these millions and presumably billions at this point, why would he talk to anyone else? He fucking just riffs it for 3 hours once a week or twice a week, whatever he's doing. And I think what we can take away from that is like, we should be really, really skeptical both about the people we bring on here. That's why we're not generally speaking, a guest podcast. We will bring on guests. Stay tuned. But
that's not our aim.
Yeah, that's not our aim. We don't want to be like an interview show because we think it lends too easily to a spiral of just like consumerism.
Yes.
Where like you're just there to consume the guest and then the platform is just nothing but guests. We want you to know who we are as people, Lindsay and John, better or worse. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, I think for better. Lindsay, what are your thoughts?
I have thoughts. I've got even more than I have told you on Mark McCloskey. I want to keep going on McCloskey.
Okay, perfect. Hit me with more McCloskey.
This is my thoughts are, let's talk about truth and justice.
And truth I want and to justice talk about in the American
Mike
McCloskey. Way.
Mark, geez, I keep saying it. Mark McCloskey's complete lack of truth and justice.
Okay, all right.
That's what I want to come back to here. That's why I'm here. I don't know about y'all. Truth and justice. So
let's get back on track.
A couple of quotes from his final episode of his radio show that I would like to read out to you.
Okay,
that's what
awesome.
We just played you a little bit ago. But all right. I wanted to keep these in here also. There's this little thing called the federal judiciary that decides that they are now God. They want to stop Donald Trump because it's contrary to their political agenda.
When was this?
This was the end of March 2025.
Oh, so this is very recent. Okay, yeah, all right. The God King?
The God. He's accusing the federal judiciary of acting like God. He proposes that Congress should eliminate the district and circuit courts, leaving the Supreme Court the only federal court.
So a couple of thoughts on that. For the audience listening, technically the circuits can be regulated through budgeting from, because Congress has the power of the purse.
Mm.
So in theory, Congress could eliminate all the circuits except one.
Mm.
Or greatly narrow them. They could limit the budgeting. I do not think they could eliminate the circuit court entirely. I am not deep enough in the con law hole to confirm that.
That would take
in theory, you could effectively hamstring the court system by just depriving it of funding. And often it already is deprived of funding. Here in King County, we're losing a lot of our COVID emergency funding this year. Prosecutors are dealing with 200 or 300 cases each. To speak nothing of the public defenders, which similarly are managing huge volumes of cases. So it would be, honestly, I mean, the judiciary lacks an independent enforcement mechanism that's not outside of the U.S. federal marshals.
Mm.
But on top of that, the judiciary also has a fantastic vulnerability in that they need money to hire staff to push the paperwork.
Mm.
If I were wanting to cripple the judiciary, I would simply do that and bury everyone.
Yeah.
But hey, what do I know? I'm not in federal power.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Yeah.
I would like to read the start of this quote. This is the one that we heard him finish on air just a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm.
They had this thing, this show up on television called Sesame Street. We've got people living in trash cans that you're supposed to find entertaining, right? And everyone is supposed to share and share alike and have warm feelings and feel good about themselves. And, you know, it starts with Sesame Street. And then it goes to participation awards in sports.
What's Unk's beef with Sesame Street?
I don't know.
This is coming up a lot. I feel like PBS is generationally killed his son or something.
Maybe.
Dude has a personal vendetta with Big Bird.
I was listening to this before we recorded this episode, and I was in the office waving my hands about Sesame Street? Sesame Street? He's attacking Oscar the Grouch. So I just wanted to share that a little bit.
Oh my God. I just don't know who this benefits.
Right.
Nobody. Don't know
who he's feeding rhetoric. Yeah. I listened to about half of this episode in full before I was I can't listen to any more of this. It is not logic. It is not argument.
He hasn't posted in a month, has he?
Yep. His this last one, March 23rd, 2015. So 2025.
Don't tell me the name of his podcast so we don't boost his his ratings.
We don't want
to. But how does he do? Did he do weekly before?
It was a radio show, so it was Sunday evenings live.
Radio show. Okay.
Uh-huh.
God, that's so 2008.
Isn't
recession
it?
Recession coded to have the radio show going.
I'm not sure when he started it, but it literally just ended in March 2025. The reason why it ended, this I just learned this morning. He is on a team of lawyers who are preparing to sue the federal government over allegations of mistreatment towards January 6th rioters.
Who were already all pardoned.
Yes. And now they're suing the government saying the government didn't treat us right when they were accusing us of treason.
I would actually love to dig into those indictments. But honestly, I believe it. I think the federal government... I think everyone should be treated fairly by the federal government.
That's true.
If their complaint, knowing nothing about their complaint, if their complaint is just that they were charged, not going to fucking fly for me. Mm-hmm. But if their complaint was something specific and valid, I'd be happy to have, give them their day in court.
That's
my,
true.
My ideals, advocate for that, even if I fucking hate them.
To my knowledge, no lawsuit has been filed yet. I think they're still working on it. It, from a New York Times article that I found on it, claims of mistreatment by federal prosecutors, FBI agents, and prison guards. That's all we got. They're claiming they're victims, not the perpetrators. Yeah, he's not a defense lawyer. He's a personal injury lawyer.
Well, I mean.
But, we can have different practice fields. And apparently he had a short stint as a defense lawyer. But I wouldn't want him on my defense.
Oh, I mean, sorry. First off, yawn there on air. We're keeping that in. I think we're recording. Unusually, we're recording towards the end of the day today. So usually we record first thing in the morning. I think lawyers can appear and like do a lot of damage. And if like the underlying merit is not significant, then you can just flail in any direction and make a bunch of noise. And a lot of these suits are political in nature, and you don't have to be a good lawyer at all to file political suits. Just fucking file them. It only costs like $350 in most places.
It's not bad.
Not bad. You know, all the justice you can buy. The good news is that what is so interesting about all these people that endorse Trump is that Trump has had fantastic difficulty replicating his political success down the ticket.
That's for sure.
Not just recently, but like in the last 5 years, if you do a little mini Trump act in the primaries, both Republican and at national levels, on average, you will fail. Like Trump's grip on the Republican Party is top down only. It is not bottom up. He's having tremendous difficulty bringing someone in to capture the spark that he seems to solely hold. Mm-hmm. And even in his direct, like, surrounding political appointees, Marco Rubio, RFK Jr., mm-hmm. his, you know, Secretary of State, his Commerce Secretary, all of his cabinet cannot capture his same charisma.
Yes.
This is why I'm saying that, like, the Republicans are actually teeing themselves up for a super-duper fantastic succession crisis if nothing is done in the next 4 years or, you know, whenever Trump passes away in the next 10, 15. And Mark is actually a fantastic example of that because he tried to do the whole Trump thing culture war and flamed out spectacularly.
It really did. It was a failure.
And Schmidt, the gentleman who primaried and defeated him, is not that I'm a huge fan of him, but he's far more moderate. That sort of dog bone play was not compelling to many of the voters in Missouri, which I find and continue to note. Trump... only I call him a paper tiger because he appears strong, but he blinks very frequently, fast and often never even takes on fights he maybe can't win. He only picks overwhelming fights where he can win quick victories rapidly, or at least appear to.
Yes. Fight the image of fighting.
Yeah. The appearance of strength.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I that's what I would keep my eye on here. I think one of the takeaways here is that this gentleman was Mark McCloskey was a royal dickhead on a variety of fronts to his fellow man. Especially his observations that the federal judiciary cannot bind the federal government because that's the whole point of the federal judiciary ultimately is to stop the government from doing crazy things.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes nationwide, if an injunction is warranted. And actually, speaking of which, I'm actually just getting news here that the federal government just 2 hours ago at the time of this recording on April 15th just granted a preliminary nationwide injunction to stop the Trump administration from freezing federal funds to nonprofits apportioned under the Inflation Reduction Act. And most importantly, to resume payments and disbursements already awarded to various nonprofits. So the federal government, this is the sort of thing the federal judiciary does all the time.
Mm-hmm.
At least these are preliminary injunctions and not final dispensation of the issues on their merits. But still, this is the sort of thing that the federal government does, that these attorneys have lost their ability to see that in their ideological fervor. I think attorneys are people and they will unleash hell if given a chance.
Yes.
For better or for worse.
Yeah, and that's our story for today, folks. That's Mark McCloskey.
Any final thoughts, Lindsay?
I think what you just said about when the political ideology overshadows, that's what really gets my goat about this. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, theoretically, he could be using his litigious prowess to increase access, you know, and he, from what I see, appears to exclusively be trying to restrict access and just this rhetoric over and over and over again about
we should do
the left. There was a quote at the beginning of the podcast. He said that radio show episode, he said, quote, "So many things that the left pushes on you are completely nonsensical," end quote.
I mean, that
sort of rhetoric is what really gets me.
I know that left-wing rhetoric over the last 5 years has changed in response to Trump administration, but the fundamental policies that the Democrats, at least mainstream ones, I do not follow any actual communists, that have been calling for has not really shifted. It's things like universal health care, fight for 15 or 20 now. I'm hearing whispers of that. You know, getting overturning what's it called? Citizens United. There we go. Supreme Court decision. We should do an episode on that.
Yes, we should.
Overturning these bread and butter policies that have not too much changed. And I am currently watching Republicans on a national stage at the head of the Republican Party, not just fringe idiots, call for universal protectionism and an overturning of the entire global order. And that is a very new thing we've seen in the last 2 years. Wow. And so when people say that, like, oh, the left is far left and they've only gotten lefter, I almost wish that the national discourse was as flexible as that, put it that way.
Yeah. I wish we could all be a little bit more flexible in these points of view.
Yeah, but anyways, everyone, that's our show for today. If you go to our website, gospel.prejudice.com, you submit stories, thoughts, pledge as little as $5, keeps the lights on. I would very much appreciate it as a personal favor if you could give this show to someone you care about, wanted to see more of what our work is doing. Also, leave us a review on podcast platforms. It tremendously helps us get off the ground. I use Spotify, and we are now at 8 reviews after only like 2 months, which is actually kind of crazy.
Thank you so much.
We now actually have an audience. It's actually really hard to know how large of an audience we have, but we think we have about 100 to 150 of you listening over time, which is kind of crazy. We didn't expect anybody to be listening to this for like
months.
6 months. Yeah, exactly. I don't think your mom even listens to this podcast.
We've talked about it like twice, like total.
Because I know mine doesn't. Anyways, we will be back very, very soon. This has been Gossip Without Prejudice. I greatly appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you so much. Bye. Ooh.